Hello, everyone. This is Shamira and Maria from What's Up Public Health. Today, we will be giving an update on the COVID-19 in the U.S. and the public health work being done to flatten the curve. Stay tuned and join us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maria, and I'm one of the podcasters from What's Up Public Health.
And I'm Shamira from What's Up Public Health, and today we are giving you an update on COVID-19. So what is the coronavirus? Where did it originate? COVID-19 comes from the family of coronaviruses. Corona means crown, and the virus receives this name because under a microscope, the virus has a crown on top. 4 or 5 coronaviruses cause the common cold, including mild to moderate respiratory illnesses. But this one that is causing COVID-19 is one we have never seen before and new to our immune system. There are new coronaviruses that affect animals and have the ability to jump from animal to humans. Most respiratory illnesses spread by large droplets that come out when coughing and sneezing, which can spread within six feet in front of them. The droplets can be transmitted via surfaces by touching doorknobs and other surfaces, but it's unknown how long the virus can survive on these surfaces. The World Health Organization declared the coronavirus disease outbreak a global health emergency in January 2020 after the virus was discovered in Wuhan, China. And later in March, the WHO declared it a pandemic. So the current status of COVID-19, worldwide, we have about 1,187,798 cases. And with the top 4 countries affected, the U.S. tops at 302,902 cases. Spain comes in second at 124,736 cases. Italy, 124,632 cases. And Germany comes in at 95,637 cases. The total number of deaths in the U.S. are hovering around 8,347. Which is growing every single day, and it's a concern. But if we keep social distancing, we'll hopefully see this number lower.
Yes, I agree, especially because the data has been shown, we really haven't reached our peak yet in the U.S., so this number is still expected to exponentially increase.
And that's a good point. I think it's good to note that, for people to note that the reason why the cases are growing as quickly as they are is because this virus has the ability to spread exponentially, meaning it has the ability to affect hundreds of thousands of people a day. And if we're not doing our own part with social distancing and sheltering at home, this virus can really spread a lot worse than what it is now. So just moving on to hotspots. Maybe we should mention about the first, I guess, like the top states that are affected, since we do have a case in every state currently. New York is the state with the highest number of cases and the highest number of deaths currently in the U.S. New Jersey comes in at second. Louisiana, Michigan, California, Washington, with growing cases in Indiana and Texas, 500 cases a day. So that is a lot of cases a day. And if we're, as said before, if we're doing our part, we can definitely lower the number of cases that are being found every day if we're social distancing and sheltering in place. So the prevention steps that we can take to try to lower the number of cases a day and prevent ourselves from getting the coronavirus. So the part, like I said, do your part by practicing social distancing and maintaining a distance of at least 6 feet from others. The 6 feet is sort of what I mentioned earlier about the droplets. So when you sneeze or when you cough, you can expel those droplets within 6 feet in front of you. So if you're doing social distancing and you're practicing that, you're sort of preventing yourself from getting the virus. A way to get the virus, which is just by making sure that you're maintaining a 6 foot distance from the person who you're standing next to or near. The next is to stay out of crowded places. So don't go to any parties. I know in New Jersey, there's been some concerns about that. People still kind of living their life like normal. And while this is the new normal for now, you know, you want to just try to avoid crowded places like malls or shopping centers, gyms, things like that. And then also follow the CDC guidance if symptoms develop. So you want to be alert for symptoms. You want to watch for fever, cough, and shortness of breath. And take temperature if symptoms do develop. So you want to make sure you don't have a fever.
Yes, and I like to say that we need to plan, not panic. If we plan and do what we have to do, we can definitely assist in flattening the curve. We have a lot of responsibility, really, on how this virus goes, whether it increases or decreases. If we do our part, we will start seeing that we will be impacting, and we will flatten the curve, as everybody is saying. But we really need to do our part, and we have a huge responsibility during this pandemic. So I think following all those prevention steps is definitely something that is going to help. Now, moving on to the public health measures being taken by the government, both federally and statewide. So one of these measures is a stay-at-home order or shelter in place. These orders require people to stay at home and only go out to the essential activities. Now, this is where it can get tricky, because the definition of essential activities is defined right now by states, because the stay-at-home orders or shelter-in-place orders are being put right now by the state. It hasn't been put by the federal government. So let's say, for example, you live in Arizona. In Arizona, we currently have a stay-at-home order that includes till 5 p.m. today. Everything is an essential activity or an essential business, from hospitals to hair salons to golf courses. Versus Wisconsin, who has a very similar amount of cases as Arizona, they have had the stay-at-home order since March, and they've banned recreational places like team sports and several other businesses that states like Arizona, despite having similar numbers, have open still till 5 p.m. today. Because hopefully by 5 p.m. today, we'll start being a little bit more strict and some of the essential businesses are going to start going to non-essential businesses. But it does vary. Because I know, Shamira, I know it's much more strict, obviously, in New Jersey, right?
Yes. So in New Jersey, it's been strict for about, I want to say, almost a month now. So this shelter-in-place and stay-at-home order, they expect for you to only leave your home if you're, let's say, going food shopping, because you have to leave for, like, those essential things, if you need to go to the bank to pay your bills, things like that. And they do have police out sort of making sure that people aren't just kind of driving around going wherever they want. So they are sort of policing and making sure that you are abiding by these rules that our government is putting in place about sheltering in place, social distancing, and not, you know, having parties or doing anything that's going to exacerbate the situation a lot worse.
Yeah, Arizona right now hasn't gotten that far yet, but obviously we don't have 34,000 cases. We have 2,000 cases, but definitely yeah. It's very different, right? And I think that
very similar. Yeah, very, very different. But I think in New Jersey, what's scary is that we're going on, it's going to be the second month. So I think they just want to get out of their house. I know how that sounds, but I think people just want to get out of their house, and it's hard to find a place to go where there isn't a lot of people at this point, like the parks and things like that. The parks are still open here, so you're able to, because it's easy to social distance in a park than it is in, let's say, a room full of people. So I think that's the difference between maybe these two is the number of cases here, but I still think that all states should have the same regulations in order to get the virus down. That's my personal thing, but
I personally agree, just because I also think that it's become very confusing for the public on what to do, just because the definitions of shelter in place, we've heard stay at home, which in theory are pretty much the same thing. They just have different semantics attached to them. But the definitions of a lot of things are different. So I think a lot of people have eventually gotten confused of what means what. And just because there's also social media and so many different outlets that you just start getting overwhelmed. And like you mentioned, some people for New Jersey, for you guys, for New York, it's in Arizona, we've been like this for about 3 to 4 weeks that since the recommendation started, but the stay-at-home order just started last week. So we're still sane, but it's going to start going downhill maybe sometime soon. So the testing. So that's been another question. Should we test or should we not? Some states are doing more testing than others. Some states have really emphasized that testing is necessary, while others have said that testing isn't going to change anything because individual treatment doesn't usually change if you have a positive COVID-19 test. So a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't, maybe we shouldn't test, maybe we should. The simple answer, public health-wise, is yes, we should test. We have to remember that the purpose for testing is for public health purposes. We test to know how many cases are out there, so we can know what public health measures to take. Just like we spoke of right now, the public health approach or public health measures being taken in, for example, New Jersey, that has 34,000 cases, may vary to another place that only has 1,000 cases. So we need to make sure that we are testing, and if we're not testing, we need to assume the worst, especially with COVID-19, that, like we mentioned, increases exponentially. So if one person goes out, they can infect, if that person is infected and they go out, they can infect up to hundreds of people. And that's a little scary, in my opinion.
Now, yeah, I mean, I just think people really need to understand that how the federal government is also regulating the testing. The government has certain requirements for you to get tested for COVID-19. So you aren't just allowed to walk into a hospital and say, I think I have COVID, and get tested right away. That wasn't sort of how that worked even a month ago when the tests first started becoming available. So even now, you're not able to right away go and get tested for COVID-19 until you have certain symptoms and you have progressed far enough for them to be able to test you for the disease, which is scary in and of itself, because the other day I was reading on Twitter someone who did test positive for it, but she was on a hotline for about an hour waiting to speak with someone, and she ended up getting through like her local hospital emergency room when she called them and told them her symptoms and all that, and they patched her through, and they actually told her, like, we can't test you until, like, basically, like, you're further along and, like, you're, you know, you have, like, you know, you already are kind of, like, in those second or third stages of the illness. So, I mean, that's not a great criteria to have to test people. I think that they should be testing people early on and not waiting until those symptoms, you know, progress to their worst.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the U.S. as a country is a little bit, we're being more reactive than proactive. Waiting till you are very deep into the disease is a little bit more of reacting to it rather than being proactive. Because a lot of people, what they're doing is that they'll have symptoms. They'll think, oh, it's probably something else. I can't even get tested. So they'll go out regardless. And that's just not how it should be. I think there's a huge issue right now. In Arizona, it's the same. You have to have really dire symptoms. My brother had mild pneumonia, and even so, he still couldn't get tested. So it definitely, in my opinion, is not the best approach. But I think at the end of the day, it came down to how late we reacted. When we started having cases back in January, if we would have prepared then, maybe we would have enough test kits right now to send to everybody. We would have a protocol in place, but we decided to get ready once the virus was already here and infecting everybody. And by then, there was a lot more problems than just testing. There was just the burden of the medical system. And I think that's another thing, is that one of the reasons we need to test is not just for individual treatment, but because we don't want to burden the healthcare system. We want to know how many beds, how many ventilators, how many personnel you need. And if you don't know how many cases are most likely out there, you can't get approximation. You're not going to know what to do in the healthcare system. And that's another thing that's going on right now, is now we have the issue of a overburdened, overwhelmed healthcare system. We should have
planned earlier. Yeah, especially in the New York City area. That's where we're really seeing the stress of the burden on the healthcare system is happening, is in New York City. And Governor Cuomo recently released something, I think it was either Thursday or Friday, where he was asking people to come from all over the country, doctors, nurses, to come and help within the New York City hospitals, because they're so overwhelmed with cases, and there is just not enough doctors and healthcare providers to the number of patients that they have. There's just no way they're going to get to everyone. And that's why you see the number of cases of deaths go up, is when there's not enough ventilators, there's not enough healthcare staff to assist all the people who are sick. And as someone who worked in an ED in New York City, in a very busy ED in New York City, one of the busiest, I found that when I was there during, you know, maybe this season and probably the beginning of winter, you found that there was a lot of people who would come into the ED, and if they were healthy enough to stand, they had to stand because there weren't enough beds. So that's what they're dealing with right now in New York City and in our EDs. And it's really scary to think that there are just some people who will not be treated. So
it is.
That is the burden that we're dealing with at the moment. And I think they're trying to avoid that happening in other cities across the U.S. Because when that happens, you're going to start to see an uptick in the number of cases. You're going to start to see an uptick in the number of deaths. And we want to try to avoid that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons, too, why we need to really make sure that individually we are taking the preventative health measures. Because while, and this argument has been given a lot, specifically from the Generation Z, as they call it, the younger folks, if they get it, they're obviously, their chances of fatality is much lower than somebody with pre-existing conditions, with that's older, that has comorbid conditions, etc. But at the end of the day, it's still a bed. It is still a burden in the healthcare system. And that's one thing we also need to take in mind, is that as Americans, we need to be responsible and know that, do our part so we help those healthcare professionals that are on the front lines. And that is simply just by staying at home and having somebody else take that bed, somebody that actually needs it. So that brings me on to masks. So the CDC now is recommending also another preventative health measure for individuals to take, is to wear non-medical masks when going out. Initially, the recommendation was the opposite. The CDC said do not wear masks because they wanted to save those medical masks for the healthcare professionals. And that's still the mindset. That's why the recommendation is non-medical mask. But now the reason for the recommendation is because, as we know, if you're asymptomatic, you can still spread COVID-19, which is one of the biggest threats of COVID-19. And if you wear a mask, you will, it will allow that your germs, per se, will not go out. They'll stay in your mask. Usually that's how it works, and that's what they're trying to aim at. So hopefully this will help decrease the number of cases as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I agree with that. I think the CDC's recommendation is a solid one. I mean, we have a lot of celebrities who've come out and said that they've been tested and have tested positive for the coronavirus, such as Idris Elba. He was a prime case of, at the beginning of when this was first being reported, he had tested positive, but he did not have any symptoms. And I mean, that's concerning when someone is, they're carrying something, but you don't know that they have that. So it, you want to make sure that you're protecting everyone. And in order for everyone to do their part, I think the CDC's recommendation was a solid one, to have everyone start wearing non-surgical masks.
Yeah, and I think one thing to remember is when you put on a mask, for everyone that's going to follow the CDC recommendation, is to always know what side your mouth is on Because the goal is that you're not going to touch that infected side, right? That you'll wash it or do something before touching that side. So just always remember, maybe different colors or something. That way you know which side is the side that you're putting to your mouth. Because you don't want to do the opposite, right? Where you forget and you have the area that touched your mouth in the outside the next day. Because then now everything's out there. So that's also a good thing to remember when making your own homemade masks, as they're calling them.
Okay, and so moving on to resources for updates. A great resource here in the United States is to use the Center for Disease Control, the CDC. They have a lot of great updates about the coronavirus, where we are, prevention methods, and their recommendations for what we should be doing for our own part. The WHO, which is the World Health Organization, provides guidances to our health authority here in the United States, and they in turn provide these recommendations to our state and local governments, which are also really great resources to find information about curfews, also about closures maybe in your area, such as restaurants, bars, and making sure that you're doing your part if there's any specific policing in your area, or if they just recommend that you shelter in place and do not leave your home until a certain amount of time, they would have that information there as well. And then if you're looking for an Instagram account for resources, check out Hey It's Chow. It's H-E-Y-I-T-S-C-H-A-O. She is a Johns Hopkins plastic surgery resident who provides information on ways to help with the pandemic in your local communities by donating money, personal protective equipment, and blood donations to hospitals.
Yes, and thanks a lot for sharing those resources so people can know where to go. Because like mentioned, sometimes the definitions and what's going on varies between states. So definitely keeping track of that is good. Now, some resources for the general public, like free apps. There's been a lot of apps that you do have to pay, but that have decided to for some few months to try and mitigate the social burden, which, for example, the economy and all of that have decided to have it for free. One of them is Down Dog. That's a yoga app that is really neat. I had actually never done yoga until I put that app on, and it's pretty cool, you guys. There's also Headspace. That's a meditation app that usually does cost per year or per month, but they are doing certain meditation programs on the app for everybody. There's also a lot of free educational resources out there that usually cost money, but right now, like mentioned, they're not. One is Scholastics. ABC Mouse, that's an app, and NASA is also giving some educational material for parents that have the kiddos at home that can be quite tough as well. Now in New York, also in other states, but particularly in New York, there's also a free emotional support and consultation line with a therapist. The number is 1-844-863-9314. And there you can pretty much connect with a therapist and they can help you sort of mitigate the situation, because it's also a lot of emotional turmoil having to change your routine completely and just change everything. And there's also the economic aspect. So other things that are good is the local food banks, and sometimes even local schools are giving free curbside lunches for the kids. So it's a very hard time, not only physically, because we have to be physically distant, but also emotionally and mentally, because we can't interact necessarily physically with people right now. We have to change our whole routine. Some people are losing their jobs. Some people are students like myself, and you have to completely adapt to online courses, which for me was pretty difficult because I'm used to always being on the run and talking to people and seeing, and I just had to stop that completely. So it's definitely a stressful time. So I think that's why we're going to switch it up a bit and end this podcast with some happy stories for you guys, so we don't end you guys so emotionally down. So Shamira, you want to share your story first?
Yes, I am so excited for this part of the podcast. So I read on Twitter, I saw a It was actually an article in the New York Times about a Brooklyn landlord that canceled rent for tenants. The landlord wrote, "Due to the recent pandemic of the coronavirus COVID-19 affecting all of us, please know I am waiving rent for the month of April 2020. Please stay safe, help your neighbors, and wash your hands." So I just thought this was amazing. You're finding in this time that people are sort of trying to navigate how to pay their bills as well as juggle, you know, having the kids home and things like that. So it's a really stressful time, as you said, Maria, and, you know, not having to worry about rent for 1 month is really great, especially when you just don't know where that money's going to come from. So I just thought that this was a really great story, and it really brought up my spirits to read this, because there's a lot of people struggling who are out of work, who don't have the luxury of working from home and still getting paid. So this was a really great article, and I really wanted to share it.
It is. It is a really great article, and it's a great act of kindness, you know, that a lot of people like himself are doing to try and make people feel better about this, about everything that's going on. I myself saw that a subscriber, she was subscribed, I believe, to Seattle Times, sent all her local newspaper reporters pizza as a way of saying thank you, which I thought was amazing, because a lot of journalists and reporters are also in the front line. We saw Governor Cuomo, his brother, actually also a CNN anchor, got sick with COVID-19, and because they definitely are, they're in the front lines, they're for us to tell us what is going on. So I thought that was also a great act of kindness to try and lift people's spirits up. Personally, for me, if I were to say something good that's happened throughout this whole pandemic is, well, now that I'm stuck at home, I didn't want to eat my full pantry, so I decided to exercise at home, which I had never done before. I tried once and I failed epically, but now I have no choice because I have to stay inside. So I actually started doing it. I'm using the app FitOn, and it's been pretty exciting because now I gained a new ability being at home as well as just practicing social distancing. So I've learned new abilities here and there, trying to get creative.
Yeah, I think you made a good point there, Maria. I mean, I think a good part of this is just being able to connect with people who I'm close to, who I can't physically be close to. So friends from near and far, I'm able to do virtual painting classes with them and also do fitness classes with them through apps and do yoga with them through apps. So it's a great way to sort of connect with people and still have that social aspect while also distancing yourself. So it's a way for you to kind of keep in touch and still be able to do fun activities right from home.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that we have to remember is that we do have to practice social distancing, but physically distant ourselves. But we can still socially connect, whether it's virtually through Zoom, that's become extremely popular. I even had a virtual Zoom happy hour throughout this month that I've been at home. You can also, there's social media. There's, like you mentioned, the virtual workouts that you can add people in, and you can do that virtually and still practice that physical distancing that we need to do in order to help do our part to decrease the pandemic and all the cases occurring. So that's one thing that we have to remember is that let's check in with everyone. Let's check in with old friends. Let's still remain that connection that we have with the people that we love and check in on everybody, because it is a tough time that we're all having. I think for now, that is all we have. This is What's Up Public Health, and we hope to be back soon, you guys. Stay tuned. Bye.
Stay tuned. Bye.